are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great day. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, I know the kind of brother and sister that you is. You're going to get it done because that's what you do. And we love you for that. Appreciate that, no doubt about it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the timeforanawakening.com and check out the previously recorded programs. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed on it and click on that for previously recorded programs. My good brother, Brother Kwaku, who's on the road, and congratulations to Brother Kwaku. He has a new grandson, and I know he's a proud grandpa. So congratulations, dear brother, and also too to my good brother Franklin Jones, my Wednesday co-host. But of course, today we have a special guest, and that is Dr. Renoka Rashidi, who's going to be with us shortly. and this will be my last broadcast for a while because I'm going to be leaving this Friday, be heading to Ghana, West Africa, and see a lot of friends and check out a lot of things and do some groundwork and so forth, get some information for my ultimate repatriation. And I don't know. I know a lot of us don't want to do that. And to me, you don't have to physically go there, but as long as your mind is right and you support repatriation, you support African people doing for themselves, even though you want to stay here because you may be entrenched, you may have a mortgage that's out of sight or whatever the case may be, but you know in your right mind, in your heart, that we should be independent. We should be self-determining. We should be liberated. But above all, we should be sovereign. We should be a sovereign people. And so always to support that. Like I said, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any time around the world. But there's other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays in the evening. All times are going to give our Eastern times. It's Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with your host, Dr. William Rogers. He hasn't been on the last few weeks, a little under the weather, but Dr. Rogers is doing fine, and he will be on hopefully next week Tuesday. Back to reality for Dr. Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. This evening, Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. Tomorrow, Relationships with Joanne Troy, 7 p.m. Relationships with Joanne Troy. And on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. on Friday. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it ain't me. It's Sister POC and her program, Revive, on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Excuse me. It is time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Excuse me. Wish I had one of those buttons, you know, when I was at a couple of times that I had the opportunity to be broadcasting from a radio station. Yeah, but they just have a button. You just press the button and then bam, you know, you can go ahead and talk. And cough and anything else you feel you needed to do. But of course, I don't have that kind of equipment, so bear with me. Appreciate it. We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. They are the largest. They have the largest online marketplace for WeBuyBlack.com of products that are produced by us. Laundry detergent, soap, so forth. So check out We Buy Black. They also, if you're in Atlanta, and if you're in the Atlanta area, at the Greenbrier Mall, they have a kiosk there at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahimba, he is taking our brothers and sisters once again to the motherland, and that will be next month, May 22nd to June 4th. There is still room available. I talked to me the other day. $3,700 for the trip, 14-day. Okay, get a chance to check out Garvey Town, which I'm going to do when I go there this weekend. And then he also has another trip to South Africa, November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then at the end of the year, December 24th to January 4th, he's going back to Ghana. So you please check out Brother Bomani Tahimbe, and the number to call is 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to check out pictures of his previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out videos of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani2007. Shrine of the Black Madonna. They have books, they have furniture, they have clothing, they have artwork, they have it all. They have the red, black, and green shoes that if you see me out and about, and I'm not in dress shoes, I'll have those shoes on my feet. I'm going to be loving it, taking them to Ghana for the next couple of weeks. You know it. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta. And the number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They have a class every Saturday, Know Thyself. Know Thyself every Saturday, free and open to the public, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30. And Brother Olatunji, excellent. But if you can't deal with the class, then you can also get the multimedia library. That's right, brothers and sisters. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. You are going to have in your possession 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. And you can get that from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore in our area at the Greenbrier Mall, located right near the kiosk of We Buy Black, is Medu Bookstore. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. My good sister there, owner of Medu Bookstore. If she doesn't have the book that you are looking for, she will make sure you get it. Another bookstore is my good brother, Kazimde Ajamu, Black Dot, Cultural Center and Bookstore. There is light in the Black Dot in Lithonia. To give him a call at 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. And he has the red, black, and green shoes as well. He's got the new white ones, the new UNIAs. Very nice, very comfortable. I was going to wear them to Africa, but I don't know. I'll debate on it. Debate on it. All right. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The radio broadcast is tomorrow evening on Blog Talk Radio, and the number to call for Ulu at 9 p.m. The 9 p.m. Thursday night broadcast is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And, of course, we sell coffee. We pulled our money together as a cooperative, and we created Cafe Ulu. Cafe Ulu. Go online to CFEULU.com. Buy some coffee. And if you're in the Atlanta area, our cafe is located 2036 Sylvan Road. 2036 Sylvan Road. And they're open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. We got Cameroon Boyo, which is my favorite. We got Tanzanian. We got Kenya. We got Ethiopia, where coffee started, and a variety of coffees from other places, other African countries, and throughout the world. Cafe Ulu. And the one drink we sell at Cafe Ulu is Ambrosia, my good brother Novak Young. He has a delicious vitality drink of Ambrosia, which is alkaline water, cane sugar, organic cane sugar, let me be precise, ginger, turmeric, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. All good stuff for you, brothers and sisters. All good stuff for you. My good brother Baba and Ya Baruti, Akabin Institute and Akabin House, they celebrated last month their 20th anniversary, but they need help, brothers and sisters. We're asking you to send a check, money order, whatever, to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, 30310 in Atlanta, Georgia. Also, go on PayPal and Cash App. You put the dollar sign in Yah, Y-A-A-M-B-A-R-U-T-I, Yah M. Baruti. All right. They need support, and they deserve to be supported. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to read, today is the 3rd. I'm going to read the 3rd, of course. Always read the day of, but I'm going to read the day before, and that is April 2nd. April 2nd. Freedom is not an idea located outside of man, nor is it an idea which becomes myth. It is rather the indispensable condition for the quest for human completion. Pablo Freire. Freedom, like power, is in our essence. It is inherent, creator-given characteristics inexplicably by any means. It is a spiritual force, whether recognized as inseparable part of individual choice or not. It is always there. It cannot be given. It cannot be taken except by force or choice. And if when force is involved, it is still a choice because physical and mental captivity are two different things. An individual's freedom is not the domain of any other individual or individuals. We also speak of group freedom, but that can only be accomplished if every individual within that group personally claims their freedom. A group wherein any individual does not consider him or herself to be free because of external constraints is not truly liberated. That group may be powerful, it may be autonomous, but it would not be, by definition, free. Freedom is a living phenomenon, and because it is alive, it must be maintained and cared for like any other living, breathing, growing, dynamic, creative thing, or it will become weak and sickly. Neglected long enough, it will surely entropy and die, losing itself to the recesses of our memory. Sadly, real freedom is something most Africans never realize because they do not exercise individual choice. Whether they are aware that the choices they make are not their own or not, we cannot visualize power or personal power. Affirm, I struggle for the right of African people to choose freedom. Affirm, I struggle for the right of African people to choose freedom. April 3rd, to deculturalize African American children is, therefore, to deprive them of that which determines the way they think, feel, and behave. Felix Botang. We cannot afford to forget who we are and what we must do to return our truth to power. The penalty for our descendants is too high. They must be made to remember who they are, or they will be led
even further into the blinding whiteness many of us run blindly toward. It is said that it only takes two willfully ignorant generations for a people to be completely lose their way. Conscious African adults must recognize, however, that regardless of how thorough and invaluable we believe ourselves to be, our children cannot be completely sheltered from an evil insanity without separating them from the call of insanity in a world where insanity rules. Western culture is consciously insidious, and the carriers of Western culture know that the best way to disclose, fragment, and destroy people is to corrupt their children. To be someone other than ourselves is to be insane. To knowingly make choices which would allow our children to be driven insane is unforgivable. Therefore, African logic dictates the need for an independent, separate, protected community in which we can rear our children into African adults, or all efforts will be for naught. If you swim in an ocean of insanity, you're bound to get wet. If you are rearing our children to be true nation builders, we have no choice. There are chances we absolutely cannot take. Affirm, I'm returning our truth to power. Refirm, I'm returning our truth to power. In Ye Say Sim of daily revolutionary thought. Man, got to get it together. And today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and as I sent out, we do have a esteemed guest on the radio program today, and that is Dr. Renoka Rashidi. Dr. Renoka Rashidi, are you there?
Yes, I thought you had an esteemed guest.
Yeah,
it was such a build-up, man. I can't, for the life of me, figure out who this person could be.
Yeah, no, it is you, my brother.
But until that person comes on,
that's right,
I'll fill in for him and do the best I can, man.
Oh, you'll be admirable, believe me, knowing you. How you been?
I'm all right, my brother. How about you?
I'm doing fine. My voice is a little scratchy.
You had quite I don't know, I guess they'd be a list of advertisers or people that support you and you support in that community. I was very, very impressed, my brother. It's a long list of very distinguished folk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to help folks out and, trying to make sure that our community becomes aware here locally and nationwide. This program, once again, is dedicated to independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for our people. And so anybody that promotes that and openly espouses that, you definitely have a place here. And any other opinions or comments or whatever, also welcome. But, it's just like I don't want to get into a debate with somebody about whether or not we should be free and self-determining. To me, that's crazy. That's ludicrous. I used to have a brother who used to come on when I was on Blog Talk Radio. And, in fact, I had to cut him off a few times. I'm saying, man, I don't want to argue with you. Whether or not, to me, the only discussion we should be having is how do we achieve, how can we come together to achieve independence and self-determination and liberation and sovereignty for our people? What are the mechanisms? What is my part? What is your part? How do we bring it all together? That's what we should be discussing, I try my best, brother.
I agree with that fully, brother. What I've been saying a lot in my presentations of that, and we're really talking about the same thing. What I say is, if we're not talking about black love, then what are we talking about?
Right.
And why are we talking? And this is one of the issues that I think about a lot now. Questions that I would have liked to have, and issues that I would like to discuss with people like John Henry Clark and Ivan Van Sertima and Dr. Ben and Asa Hilliard and so many others. And I realize now that we're the elders now.
Yeah, we
whether
are.
We like it or not, whether
That's
we
right.
rise to the occasion or not, we are the elders, and it's time for us to step up to the plate and address those issues and do our best. I think that each generation has their turn, has their opportunity to, make advances for our people, to have defeats and triumphs and failures. and each generation has their opportunity. And we're the elders now.
Right.
And it's up to us to do our job and begin to pass it down so that the next generation is a little more advanced than the generation before. That's the ideal anyway.
Right, right. And that's what it should be. I think the problem is, you know, I'm eternally optimistic, and I know you are too. You know, we have to be, you know. But when we look at what's happening with us in our communities and so forth, you know, I have to say that it doesn't look good. It doesn't bode well for us, the mentality that we have, the disrespect we have towards one another and so forth, that is played out on a daily basis. You know, let me say this, Brother Renoco, about the slaying of Nipsey Hussle. I mentioned the other day about the fact that he's supposed to be doing a documentary on Dr. Sabi. And somebody said, well, you know, you shouldn't. That's my good friend, Brother Jay, out of New York. But he said, you know, you shouldn't throw that out there like that. And what I was saying to him, I'm going to throw out all of the controversial stuff, all of the situation where, you know, it could have been. I'm trying to look for that word. It's escaping me right now. But I'm going to throw that out there because it's always that possibility, even when it looks like it was done by somebody like ourselves, just like in this case of Malcolm. There's nobody, a conspiracy theory I'm trying to think of, excuse me. But it's just like the situation with Malcolm. There's no doubt in my mind that this government, the federal government, the United States government, killed Malcolm X. Yes, the Nation of Islam created the atmospheres for it to be done more easily. And yes, there were American Africans in that ballroom on February 21st, 1965 that fired those guns. But to me, the federal government killed, like they have done all the other of our leaders, they have done. So, you know, so the brother coming down to me said, well, you know, and now, see, they got the brother that did it. Okay, that's cool. They got the brother, and I'm glad they do. And if that is truly the brother that did it, he should pay, and he should pay dearly. But never, as far as I'm concerned, I'm always pessimistic, and I'm always looking at this government with a jaundiced eye as it relates to our people and what they were, you know, capable of doing, because they've done it. In fact, many holistic, hell, they killed Dr. Sabi. Dr. Sadie was murdered. That's how I look at it. You know? So, you know, we gotta understand what we're up against. And we become, you know, and we need to be very well aware that the only people who are going to get us out of this madness is us. That is our responsibility. They put us in it, but it's our responsibility to get out of it. You know. I know you're there in LA. And I know that what is the feeling still in the city?
Well, you know, I just arrived back in Los Angeles Monday evening, and I really don't have a sense as to what people are feeling and what people are saying. And to be honest with you, I had never even heard of the brother until a couple of days ago.
Me either. Hey, man. In fact, when he said Nipsey, I thought he said Nipsey Russell. I said, Nipsey Russell? Shit, he was on those game shows back in the day with his rhyming ass. Well, you know what? Hey, him taking that name Nipsey Hussle probably makes sense, because that's what Nipsey Russell was, a rapper. But of course, we didn't call him a rapper or rhymer back in the day, if you remember Nipsey Russell. Yeah, you know.
Well, you know, I just did a series of programs in Detroit. I did a talk at a bookstore, and one of the people who came to the talk is a good friend of mine who actually lives in Gary, Indiana, of all places. His name is Brother Kwabena Jijaga Siddiqui. In fact, he's a nephew, I believe, of the late Geronimo Pratt.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the reason I bring Brother Kwabena up is because he's involved in a program, an organization that's designed. In fact, I have to get him on your show for sure. But that's designed to take the negative lyrics associated with rap music, associated with hip hop off the radio, the B word, the N word, et cetera.
I love it.
And I guess
I love it.
That I'm old and I become so disconnected with a lot of so-called popular culture in our community that I just instinctively, and I'm not saying this is right, but I instinctively associate hip hop, you know, with negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear about conscious artists in that community, you know, it comes as a bit of a surprise to me.
Right.
But anytime we lose a member of our community, whether we disagree or agree with everything that person is about, it's a loss to our community. Now, you see, I make a lot of people angry when I take the position that you cannot get angry with white folks for calling you the N-word if you call yourself the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get angry. And now this is really going to make a lot of people mad, but I feel very strongly about it, and I'm too old to really be concerned about it, is that we get very, very upset, and, you know, justifiably so, when a racist cop takes the life of a member of our community.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody in our own community takes a black life, it's kind of like, oh, well, ho-hum, we're right. The victims of white supremacy. I don't buy that. To me, a black life is a black life, and it's wrong whoever takes it. And we have to be more accountable to ourselves and our community.
I agree.
That white supremacy cannot exist unless we enable it to exist. So we play a part in our own downfall, in a sense. And I think that we need to be aware that all of our actions, what we do and what we don't do, affects our community. But, you know, a lot of people get very pissed when I talk like that. I don't spend a lot of time anymore calling white folks names. I could. I'm very articulate. I know the language well. But for me, the bottom line is, what are we going to do to get out of the hole that we're
right.
in? That
exactly.
is what we must be about, looking at ourselves in the mirror and asking ourselves, what am I going to do today mm-hmm. to advance the cause of my community?
And there's some, you know, some things you can do on a conscious level every day.
What would you say those things are? Let's have a list.
Well, number one, believe in ourselves, you know, buy from each other, help clean up our community, join an organization.
Yes.
You know, that's doing something within our community, you know,
cause you can destroy white supremacy by yourself. It
no.
does take a village. It takes an
right.
effort,
right.
a collective effort. Everybody can't do everything, but everybody can do something. So
well,
each and every one of us has to ask ourselves, what am I going to do? Now, my thing is history. That's how
right.
I let my light shine.
Right.
But everybody's not going to travel to 100-some countries around the world. You know, everybody's not going to write 19 books.
Right.
But everybody can do something. We
That's
don't
right.
all have the same... And it should be that way. We can't all do the same thing, but we can all do something. And all of those somethings are powerful. You know the old African proverb about when spider webs unite.
That's right.
The effect that they can have.
Exactly. They can tie up the elephant, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So there's something we can do. In fact, I have right in front of me 10 dynamic quotes from the Honorable Dr. Renoka Rashidi, and it says here, we cannot destroy.
I don't know if you better read those quotes, man. People are already confused, brother. I thought you were going to say down there, Imwalimo Baruti or Leonard Jeffries or somebody, man.
Well, I got the, you know, I got the book, the Inye Sesim here, but by Baba Baruti.
That brother is really, really a prolific author, man.
Yeah, he is dynamic. It's an honor to. It's an honor to know him and support him like I support you. And I support those brothers and sisters that are doing the work to help with changing the
yeah.
minds of our people. That's why I support Anthony Browder. You know, that's why, to me, whatever I can do from this platform, I'm going to do. I'm blessed now to be on Black Talk Radio Network, which is the number one podcast black network in the world, not just in the country, because, I mean, there's... we could say in the world because there's no other in the world. So it's the number one. We are.
It has a nice feeling. I don't know if I would like to use the word professional or what, but there's a different kind of vibe with even the sound of it is good. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Tony Browder, who is one of my favorite people. And the last time we saw each other was at the Metamorphosis Conference.
Exactly, in D.C.
Mm-hmm. And you were upset about something in particular, and that is about this issue of these crazy folk in our community, or trolls, or whatever they are, Russians, pushing this thing about we are not African after all, but we're Aboriginal. You know, I haven't heard much about that in the last couple of months. Has the buzz on that diminished?
I think it has.
Or is it just me? Because I don't hear much about that anymore.
No, I haven't either. I haven't seen anything, you know, in the social media. I haven't heard anything about that. What I have heard, of course, now is the issue of ADOS. And I have
They shifted, man.
Yeah.
The latest trend, the latest distraction.
Yeah.
You know, I say we are African people, and there are different groups of black folk around the world, but we are African people, and we should not further divide ourselves than we're already divided. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I take a very strong position on that.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, it's because, see, when they're coming with this idea of we seeking reparations only for American African descendants of our captivity, as opposed to us, period. It's almost like to say that the Caucasians here are different than the Caucasians who took Central America and the Caribbean and South America and colonized Africa. No, they're the same damn Caucasians. They're Europeans. They're British. They're French. They're Spanish. They're Portuguese. They're Germans. They're Italians. They're the same Caucasians. They're the same Caucasians that sat at the table, a physical table, in 1884, 85 in Berlin and carved up Africa. It's the same damn Caucasians. So my contention is, Brother Rashidi, is that we, once we get ourselves together and be more solid, we move on Caucasians. We move on Europe, United States, Australia, you name it, for redress, for the repair, to help us to repair. But first, we must repair ourselves. We need internal reparations. And one of the problems is the deep divisions and all the factions that we have within us, such as ADOS. You know, such as not saying, no, we're not African. No, we're indigenous. And they're adamant.
Well, who is driving this ADOS thing? What's the lunacy behind that?
Yvette Cornell and what is the brother's name? I'm going to get it for you right here because I have it. Yvette Cornell and another brother.
You don't have to give me their names because I don't want to glorify them.
Mm-hmm.
But what? Maybe I shouldn't have even brought it up, but it's depressing to me, man.
Yeah, it is. Because it's so divisive, you know, it's so divisive, and saying that, well, you know, if you were a refugee or if you were an immigrant to this country at the turn of this past century, then you wouldn't qualify because you weren't. And you probably weren't in enslaved. So you wouldn't qualify for this. And what they're asking for is money. See, I understand, Baba, that, you know, there are some of our people who have suffered tremendously for generations because of what this Caucasian has done. They probably have suffered in the South and other places, you know, barely getting by for generations. There's no doubt about that. And of course, they deserve to have some money to get them out of this madness. But the bottom line is that by doing such, nothing will change. In fact, I've said this a number of times. There was a Caucasian named Charles Kuttheimer, and he was an editorial writer for The Washington Post, I believe, or The New York Times. It might have been at one time either or. But anyway, I read an article, an editorial article in the Milwaukee paper about 30 something years ago when I'm sitting at the firehouse. That's what I did most of my reading, at the firehouse. And he said we should give them reparations. We gave them affirmative action. We gave them the New Deal. We gave them this. We gave them that. we should give them reparations, because it will be like a big stimulus package. With the mindset that they have, we'll get the money right back. And then we can say to them, shut up. We done gave you all of this. And then now, if you wanted to prove that there is some discrimination, it's going to be on you individually. There will be no more class actions, none of that stuff, because we have satisfied you. You know, and I think at the time he said, you know, I don't know if he said it, but I just pictured that it was like 40,000 a family and 20,000 an individual, which is not even then no money. And it, today it sure ain't no money. But that's what he had proposed at the time, because, you know, the issue of reparations, as far as ADOS is concerned, is about money. You know, my feeling, it should be about.
It's driven by the desire for reparations. That's what ADOS is fueled by.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right. And my thing is, it should be about getting infrastructure built. It should be about Africa and the infrastructure that is necessary for Africa: roads, highways, ports, schools, hospitals, towns, villages, railroads. That's what it should be about. That's what the reparation should be about: the training of our people to do these work, to do this work, you know, to build institutions. That's what it should be about. That's how I look at reparations: to repair ourselves, to be competitors in the world. But now everybody, you know, it saddens me, Baba, to look at Africa and all of us trying to run out of Africa when everybody else is trying to come in to stake their peace and their claim. It'll pretty soon be Africa will, the continent will be run by Chinese. Chinese are big time every damn where. Even when I was at a convention, firefighter convention in the Bahamas, they were building a hotel resort on a par.
This trip that you are taking to Ghana, how many times have you been to Ghana?
This will be my fourth or fifth time, I think. I think fourth time.
And when's the last time you were there?
10 years ago.
All right. I was just in Ghana in February. And much to my surprise, I saw very few Chinese. Now, I've been to, I think, 33 African countries now. I'm trying to determine if I can afford to take a trip to Angola next month. I decided I was going to go to Angola and explore and celebrate the legacy of Nzinga. Mm-hmm. And to try to see how the Portuguese screwed us. You know, each right. colonizer had their own particular technique. Each invader, each enslaver, they all had their own style. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to see how the Portuguese worked it. I've been very, very briefly in Mozambique. And, of course, I spent considerable time in Brazil. But Angola is a huge country. And also, I think that a lot more of us were taken from Central Africa than we often acknowledge. I think the belief is that most of us were taken directly from West Africa.
Right.
But
right.
I think there were also huge numbers taken from Central Africa as well, Angola and Congo. But much to my surprise, when I was in Ghana, I saw very, very few Chinese there, less than any African country I've been to so far. Another thing that really stood out, and I know this is going to stand out to you, in Accra in particular. Now, I was there before this recent trip a couple months ago. I took a group there, and I believe it was October 2016. The infrastructure in Accra in particular has changed dramatically.
Really?
I couldn't hardly believe it, brother.
Oh, I can't
and
wait.
More than any African country I've been to. I mean, the city center area has just changed dramatically. So many more international businesses are mm-hmm. there. And then you can see the imprint of the Chinese in terms of the architecture and structure, but not the physical presence of them.
Okay.
So I'd be very, very interested in getting your observations and comparing notes
sure.
on that.
And believe me, I will.
Africa is changing a lot. And as you say, if we're not careful, you know, the possibility of us losing Africa does exist.
Oh, no doubt. Oh, no doubt. And when you look at the influx of Chinese and the fact that you had Chinese men marrying Ugandan women, the Ugandan government made clear note of it and said, what the hell is going on here? Well, the deal is the offspring of those unions, you know, will be claiming African land, you know, and then therefore the father of that child, his relatives in China will be coming over claiming that land, you know. See,
I haven't seen much of that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen much of that. What I do see is Chinese men exploiting African women.
Right.
And producing a crop of children. Now, Uganda is one of my favorite countries in the motherland, one of my favorite countries in the world. And I do recall the last time that I was there, which had to be about 10 years ago. I'm overdue for a trip. In fact, next year, I'm really strongly looking at a trip to the heart of Africa, Rwanda and Uganda.
Oh, man. I heard about Rwanda.
When I was in Uganda the last time, there was some sort of legislature designed to make the Chinese like an official tribe.
Oh, man.
From a legal perspective.
Oh,
and I hear similar
crazy
things about the Zambia.
Uh-huh.
You know, so in some cases, we are clearly going more backwards than forwards.
Man, that's crazy.
So the person who's listening to these shows, you know, I'm glad that you're encouraging them to go and see Africa for themselves, because I think many of us who haven't visited the motherland have a very idealistic kind of Wakanda vision about Africa.
Right.
But Africans on the continent are not much different than Africans in other places in terms of our disorientation. Mm-hmm. About Africa and African identity. And the reason people leave the motherland is not necessarily because they want to go.
Right.
Because
right.
Africa has been so raped and robbed and pillaged,
mm-hmm,
that many people feel compelled to leave Africa in search of what they perceive as a better life.
Right.
And that's tragic.
It is. It is that you have to leave your home and something as beautiful as Africa, with all the mineral resources, all of the land, the arid land. I mean, Africa could literally feed the world. There could be no hunger in the world with the amount of land that Africa has. And that includes not disturbing the wildlife and the wildlife migrations and so forth. It is that bountiful. And then when you consider the mineral wealth of Africa, just like Dr. Clark says, that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. It is all there. And it is ours. Imagine if we could have control of that and we would sell that at a fair market value. When you mentioned Rwanda, I just saw a piece on Rwanda. They have more sisters in elected positions than any country on the continent. They are doing tremendous. They have their capital city is one of the cleanest cities in the world. Rwanda has truly.
Yeah, I had a sister from Rwanda respond to that, and she tells me that's just a ploy.
Okay.
That the government that those women, and this is what the sister says, her mother was tortured there. Her mother was a political prisoner in Uganda. And so she takes a very, very harsh view of the government. And her position essentially is that that's just a ploy. It's just a distraction. It's cosmetic. Mm-hmm. That it looks good on the surface, but the power of Rwanda lies in the hands of Paul Kagame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we talk about Africa a great deal, but the vast majority of our people, you know, here we are talking about it almost matter-of-factly, that the vast majority of our people in America are probably hard-pressed to name a single leader of Africa, or for that matter, an African who lived before slavery.
Right.
So it's interesting that we can have, and I'm proud of it, to have a very matter-of-fact conversation about Africa and be familiar with a lot of the basics, whereas the masses of our people don't know, and even worse than that,
Don't want to know.
The masses of our people don't. Yeah, exactly. Don't care to know. It's not a.
Yeah.
No, it's not of importance to them.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I guess we could say that progress is not linear, that it's uneven, that it's possible for us to make a step and a half forward and two-thirds of a step back or the reverse of that.
Yeah.
But I guess what keeps me from going completely crazy, because unlike you, I'm not eternally optimistic. I'm optimistic most of the time. I'm optimistic about 95% of the time, which is still pretty good.
That's good.
But I realize what we have gone through as a people, what we've been subjected to for over such a long period of time. And when you think about it like that, it's amazing that we're even here to have this conversation.
Period. That's right. That's right. It is. And talking in this way about a love for something that we've been trained to hate, you know?
A love supreme. That's right.
You know, it is. That's deep. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to take a break. And then after the break, I got a couple callers. I'm going to open up the lines at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today with Dr. Renoka Rashidi, the preeminent primary researcher. But you are. You are. You are the preeminent primary researcher for our people. There's some good researchers out there, too. I know you know Brother Manua Pim.
Yeah.
Yep, up north of you there in the Oakland area. He's a good researcher. There's a number of them. And Tony Browder, you know. There's a number of good researchers. But I consider you one more preeminent because I know you and I know what you have done. I know where you have been. I follow you. You know, I support you, you know. And because I think what you do and what he does and other brothers and sisters, what they do, is vitally important because to reclaim and recapture and restore the history of our people, to bring it to us. And I hope that many of us appreciate what you do, but more importantly, embrace it, internalize it, act on it. Because a lot of people, they get information, you know, they come to conferences and so forth and presentations. And once they leave, it's over. You know, they go back to the mundane things that they've been doing in the same old, you know, but I'm hoping that, but to me, you know, you continue to do it because there are people out there who are thirsting for this knowledge, the knowledge of themselves. They understand that we were not just running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose waiting for Europeans to bring us civilization. And you have proven nothing could be furthest from the truth. And the fact that you have challenged some of the things that have been said, like Scipio Africanus named Africa. You know, Africa's named after him. You know. And it's,
yeah, we have to say those things again and again and again and again and again.
I know we
I
do.
Hope that it will sink in.
Yeah.
Because we repeat a lot of the mythology surrounding Africa.
Yeah.
It's up to us and only us to reconstruct our history.
Yeah.
And if we don't do it, then that's our fault, and we'll be the ones who suffer from it.
Yeah, because nobody else is going to do it. I mean, there could be some objective Caucasians. I mean, Michael Bradley wrote the book, The White Iceman's Inheritance. You know, who was that? Black Athena. Who wrote Black Athena?
Martin Bernard.
I mean, some could argue there's some Caucasians who were probably objective. Hell, Henry Breasted was objective until the time that he wanted to create the Oriental Museum. You know, he was objective. But, I mean, hey, he wanted to get that money. And the benefactors who he was going after, they were adamant racists. They were adamant supremacists. You know, so you can't have, you know, dark-skinned people creating Kemet. No. He had to create the great white race, you know. And where that great white race is from is how they established Europe using the Caucasus Mountains. That's like, to me, Europe is not a continent. It is just a part of western part of Asia. But because the Caucasian is so bold and so arrogant, he made Europe a continent using the Caucasus Mountains as a dividing line. You see, as far as he's concerned, I do what the hell I want to do. you know, and that's how it is. So, all right, Brother Rashidi, we're going to take this break, and when we come back, there'll be more discussion. We got some callers on the line as well. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. This is, we'll still celebrate Marvin Gaye. Yesterday was his birthday. The day before was the day that his father killed him, which was sad. On April Fool's. I never forget when it happened because I thought it was an April Fool's joke, you know? Man. So we're going to celebrate the life of Marvin Gaye. He would have been 80 years old yesterday. 80 years old. Brothers and sisters, once again, stick with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
the blue sky is blue. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by the night. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more be used from man? Can't you stand?
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming right here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. Of course, my program is on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Monday evening, all times they're going to give are Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is We Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. till Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Renoko. I have this book here. It's the Inye Sesem of Revolutionary Thoughts, Daily Thoughts. And since I'm not going to be here for the next couple of weeks, but there's two that are pretty much close to this date. In fact, one is April 5th, and the quote is Anthony Browder, and the other one is April 6th. And it's somebody that we both admire, respect, and love, and have a lot of admiration for, and that is Dr. John Henry Clark. I'd like to read those two, if you don't mind, and then Baba Baruti's narratives, and then we'll open up the phone lines, or you can comment. You can comment on either one, okay?
Go for it.
Thank you. April 5th. In fact, this is a good quote that I remembered. I've tried to remember the quote that you did in terms of knowing who you are as opposed to being what you are told. And I'd like to get that quote from you later, okay? That's a very good quote that you ended at on Hidden Colors 2, I think it was. Yep. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with your thought, and it ends with your actions. Anthony Browder. Everything is related to
casual cycles. One thing causes or begets the next. We operate in a universe grounded in enigmatic change. That means each state of being builds on the state of being that came before it and lays the foundation for those states of being which are to follow. It is like steps which can only be climbed one at a time. Your fundamental interpretation of reality unconditionally dictates what you know or think you know or do. The only conditional factor in this chain of cause and effect is your fundamental interpretation of reality. If your true philosophy, how you imagine truth and reality ideally, is compromised in any way whatsoever, then all links to that lead to the final output, which is you, are compromised. In other words, what you believe is the meaning and essence of reality. What you conceive of has what should be your people's true vision, and therefore your life's mission determines what you think in the first place. So think well, brothers and sisters, think well. Affirm, I think from an African interpretation of reality. Affirm, I think in an African interpretation of reality. April 6, Dr. John Henry Clark. The genius of Europeans is that they have a talent for draining diseases. They have always drained their political sores on the lands of other people. They have the talent for recovering their internal losses by external extraction from people who had nothing to do with the crimes committed against them. Dr. John Henry Clark. Credit must be given where credit is due. There is no better at needlessly bringing chaos where there is peace and projecting their ills on others than Europeans. It is their way. They have been at war with each other since day one. They practice their aggressions within. So as they move outward into humanity to steal human status, they had to dress up their barbarities in the resources, ways, and intellect of others who have been naturally blessed with life-giving creative genius. The people who they savagely overran are innocents, destroyed by the childish avarice of a people without conscience. They rose as we fail. They rose because we fail. We cannot forget their assault was unprovoked. Never has an African people attacked a European people outside of the need to return order to their lives. That has been the case since we began and remains the case today. Affirm, I will never forget what has been done and is being done to African people. Affirm, I will never forget what has been done and is being done to African people. I just had to read those two, and I know you have a relationship with both of those gentlemen, personal, and I know that it is what we think, and that's what you've been trying to do and what I've been trying to do for many years is to put something on our people's mind to get us to purge ourselves of the ignorance and all the falsehoods, all of the lack of confidence and superstitions and so forth, to infuse us with an African-centered mindset and to build courage and to build, you know, the esteem that we need to move forward. So I had to read those two.
Yeah, and I was listening. not sure if I agree fully.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I disagree, but it really gave me a lot of thought. The one or one exception to that may be the movement of the Moors into Spain in 711.
Mm-hmm.
That does not appear to have been a defensive movement on our part. That seems to have been an aggressive movement
right.
to expand.
Right, that's a good example.
And I'll give another example, too. And then, again, I had not really thought about it, but this one I have been thinking about some. You know, I'm taking my own groups. I always lead tours. I'm taking a group to Peru in June.
Peru? Oh.
June is Black History Month in Peru.
Okay.
So they're going to pull out all the stops for us. And in addition, when I say they, I mean, there's some conscious Africans there.
Beautiful.
And then, Yeah, particularly in a community called El Carmen, in the area called Chincha. And then I'm going to go to the north of Lima for the first time, and there are some African communities there, as well as, of course, you know, Machu Picchu and the Incas and all of that.
Right.
And then in August, God willing, I'm going to take a group to Tanzania. We're going to go to the mainland and Zanzibar. In October, I take a group to Kemet. And then in November, I'm going to take a group to Sudan. This will be my second tour to Sudan. And when I was there the first time in 2016, something very interesting happened. Now, from our perspective, the perspective of being Africans in the United States, I think that there's a tendency to look at, and rightfully so, now Valley civilization as African classical civilization at its best. And we glorify the ancient kingdoms of Kemet and Kush and Ta Seti and Mero and Kerma, et cetera. These other kingdoms are not in Egypt, but in Sudan. And I was very surprised when I went there and I started talking to the Sudanese scholars there, the Nubian scholars in Sudan. They do not view the ancient Egyptians, they don't view the Kemites for the most part favorably. They see them as just another group of invaders. And that perspective came as quite a surprise to me. So when you start talking about people like Thutmose III and the great kings of my favorite dynasty, Dynasty 12, they think of them as invaders. And they don't express, it really surprised me, a sense of solidarity. There are only two pharaohs that were spoken of highly.
Pianchi.
One is Akhenaten.
Oh.
Because Akhenaten, you know, is a man of nonviolence. And the other is the king from the early 4th dynasty, a person called Sneferu.
Sneferu, yes.
So it's interesting to have various perspectives. Now, I know you said you wanted to open up the phone line, but I want to throw one other thing out there, too, in terms of perspective, and a lot of it depends on where you're from. Is our whole concept of identity, at least when I say our whole concept, I'm certainly thinking of how I have come to see the world. And that is through the veins of the one drop rule. And that if you have any African ancestry at all, no matter how light you might be, you're a member of the club. You are a sister and a brother. Now, I've just been dealing with some other Africans, and I've been communicating with this brother from Libya. And he is from, and we hear a lot about Libya. A lot of us curse Barack Obama for his involvement in the overthrow of Gaddafi.
Yes.
We hear about Africans being sold in Libya. You know, when I get requests to join my, to be a friend on Facebook, I will usually look at a person's profile and thumb through there and see what they're about. And quite often I'll see something called Stop the Slave Trade in Libya or something like that.
Sure.
So this morning I was communicating with a brother from a community there called the Tebu, T-E-B-U. And these are black people in the southeast of Libya. And they also live in the northwest portion of Chad. And I've been hearing about these folk little by little over the last few years. And they despise Gaddafi. And they think Gaddafi is a racist that has attacked that particular black community. And then this whole issue of the one, and that anybody who has any degree of Arab blood or Arab culture is in Arab, no matter how black they might be. And so I guess my
that's what happened.
Raised a lot about perspective.
Yeah, because that's how it is in the Sudan. You know, when I looked at Bashir, and I'm saying like he looked like any African, period.
Exactly.
But yet he considers himself to be an Arab, which they consider themselves to be Caucasian. You know, they're not African, they're not black. But yet this man is, you know, when you see him, if he doesn't open his mouth and you didn't know he was from Sudan, you think the brother was from any other country in Africa or any brother who is from Detroit. You know?
So I would think that these kinds of things, if nothing else, would encourage more of our people to travel and to travel confidently, but also travel with an open mind.
Yes.
And try to gain and be prepared to accept or at least reflect upon other kinds of perspectives in terms of African heritage, African identity. And maybe that is the essence of Pan-Africanism. One of the elders that I wish I had spent more time with was Jacob Carruthers. And Dr. Carruthers told me a number of very important things. And one of the things that he would tell me is that what I should do, this is when I was very young and early in my career, that instead of labeling our people, that I should go and travel around the world and listen to them and hear their perspectives. And rather than label a person and be locked into that label, to be prepared to look at things from the perspective of other members of our community and at least reflect on it. Like, for example, many times I get the question, what is the original name for the continent of Africa? You were talking about Scipio Africanus earlier and how many of us believe falsely that the continent of Africa is named after this Roman general. And I always say just the opposite of that. The Roman general is named after Africa. So people say, well then, Dr. Rashidi, Baba Rinoco, what was, if it wasn't, the name wasn't given by the Romans, then what is the original name for the continent of Africa? And my response is, what makes you think that ancient people, including in this case African people, thought of themselves as living on a continent? That the concept of continent, as you mentioned, is European, and it is relatively modern. So what we're doing is asking a question that further confuses the issue, because it's a question that has no real context within the framework of African thought. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I know that people search for what the name of the continent was, but it's obviously its area, its region, and what was known. I'm quite sure there was a thought that the continent was named Ethiopia, which, of course, Ethiopia is not even African.
Let's take it a little further then. Even if we haven't even gotten to the name Al-Kabul line, which also does not appear to be an African name. But here's something else that I get quite a bit too. And that is, what is Africa? That some people, for example, would say that the Arabian Peninsula and Southwest Asia, in this case, Israel, Jordan, Lebanon, et cetera, mm-hmm. Syria,
is part of Africa.
Is a part of Northeast Africa.
Right.
But isn't that a matter of perspective also? So that if you were looking at it, let's say, from an Asian perspective, couldn't you equally say that Africa itself could be identified as Southwest Asia?
Right.
So much of it is based on perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, and you also alluded to this, that, and I suppose this is a sad thing, is that might makes right.
Right.
And who has the power to define someone's reality and mm-hmm. enforce that definition?
Yeah.
So all of it's deep. And ultimately, I think it boils down to a question of power. Kwame Ture used to say, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem.
Mm-hmm.
If he has the power to lynch me, that's my problem.
Right.
So ultimately, what we're talking about is a quest for black power, African power,
mm-hmm.
so that truth and righteousness can prevail in the world again today.
That's right.
And we are the Ashe. Ones that can bring that about.
That's right, Ashe. I agree, African power. And I like Dr. Wade Noble's definition. I think it is definitive.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to define reality. And to me, that's what we need. Because, you know, I've been saying this, Baba, that I'd rather live in a world of my own choosing and struggle in that world of my own choosing than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. This is the Europeans' dream. And in the Europeans' dream, it is a nightmare for us. So that's why I'd rather struggle with us trying to build something. I'm going to take a call, okay? Take one of these callers.
Of course.
919. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, my name is Bobby. I'm calling from the Greensboro, North Carolina area. Just wanted to say I listen all the time. I'm very excited to be selected to just kind of chime in on the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for calling. Thank you. Go ahead.
No problem. Peace and blessings to both elders. I want to, I guess, take the conversation back to some of the earlier part of the discussion where you all were saying, you know, what is it going to take to essentially turn our condition around? And I think it's very, very simple. I think we all could agree that the behaviors that a lot of Black people or African Americans are exhibiting are learned behaviors. So we just do the same thing. We begin teaching. But I think the important part of teaching is not just teaching in large groups in a particular setting. I think it has everything to do with meeting people where they are and not where we want them to be, which means boots on the ground. We're knocking on doors. We're talking to people every day. And I think just in general, just to add to that, I just think it requires like a collaboration of all of our conscious leaders to come together and do that. And I just think it would be so powerful if we had like all of our leaders come to one area and we just target one area and just assault it with the information that people need to know and calls to action and solutions that'll help us get us where we need to be. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. Dr. Rashidi,
thank
Baba,
you
got a comment?
No, I think the sister makes some good points. Yeah. What I always say is, it's not the plan, it's the execution. It's easy for us to get up here and talk about what we should do and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of them would be right. Mm-hmm. I always say Black men need to marry Black women.
That's right.
I always say that you should get involved with an organization of like-minded people because
right.
you can't do it by yourself.
That's right.
That we need to spend more money with each other. These things are very basic.
Right.
It's not rocket science. It's the application of the plan. That's the hard part. Because in order to execute these things, it means that we have to stop doing a lot of the very same things that got us in the hole in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so it's a question of whether or not we are willing to change our behavior in order to destroy white supremacy. And at this point, I fear that for the most part, that we are not. Like, for example, I would say it's very important that Black men, and we all agree Black people need to unite and that we need power in our community. I think that most of us would agree with that. Okay. And then I would say that Black men need to be with Black women. Now, here's a brother that's racially profiled from cradle to grave, from the time he's young to the time he's old. If you walk in a store, the security seems to just focus on you with the assumption that you're going to steal something. You're usually the last one to get hired for the job, the first one to get fired from the job. Quite often, you're the first one to get killed in a movie. And yet, when it comes to picking a mate, perhaps the most important statement you can make in your life, you'll quite often say, I don't see color, and I don't see race, and I couldn't help who I fell in love with. I would say, if I go in a Black church, an African-American church, and I talk about these concepts, in other words, I would say that if you're going to be in a Christian community, you should at least have an image of God that looks like you.
I say.
If I were to say, for example, that we need Black power, and therefore we need to have a standard of beauty that is based on natural features rather than bleaching our skins and putting somebody else's hair on your head,
mm-hmm.
the same sister that said, Renoka Rashidi, I love you, and why can't Black people come together, is subject to cut my throat. Because this means that you have to stop doing what you've been doing that enabled mm-hmm. white supremacy in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when the falling out comes into being. It's easy to call in and say what Black folk ought to do. But we have been so programmed to shoot ourselves in the foot that the hard part is the execution of a plan, even when the plan is incredibly basic.
Yes,
so
I
that's
agree.
That's what I have to say.
I agree. Let me get another caller in here. 404. Good afternoon.
Hey, peace and blessing. You hear me?
Oh, go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Rashidi, man, I love you, man. Hey, and you too, OJ. But look here, I got a question for you, but I want to make a statement.
Go ahead.
My brother Nipsey Hussle. Uh-huh. Y'all know he was from Etria. His daddy was from Etria. So he had
I didn't know that.
He had more links to the continent than we got. That's the frame of mind he was in, that Wakanda dude, to take what the enemy gave him and use it to his advantage. Okay, but my question to you, Dr. Rashid, is, man, see, I'm under the African proverb is, when you got a problem, go back to the beginning. And so my quest is to Ethiopia, like Ethiopia and Ethiopia, that's the ethos, man. That's the fifth element. So I'm in the quest to learn how to take the physical law of the universe with the metaphysical law and get back to Bodoom and all this other mystical, so-called mystical stuff where we can increase our energy. Where when the enemy come with us, we repel them. So I heard you say on Carl's show about you went to one spot where they practiced Bodoom and all kind of objects was moving and all that. So what could I learn about getting our power back with Bodoom or whatever we had back then, where it was all spiritual, where we get the ether and all our energy, because it's all about energy. So I hope I made my question where you can at least help me with this.
All right. Well, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be on the Carl Nelson show today.
Okay, that's good.
At what time?
And that program is that issue about Vodun is likely to come up. Now, I can tell you, and this is maybe one of the reasons that I was very, very confused and disconcerted, is because I'm not drawn to metaphysical things. I'm not drawn to esoteric things. Yeah. And so, therefore, when something happens that I cannot explain from a left brain perspective,
mm-hmm.
then you know, I'm kind of left in a state of confusion. And I have seen things happen on my last two trips to Africa and experienced things that I don't have a rational explanation for.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So I'm probably the last person that is really effectively qualified to answer that question. And there are things that happen that I cannot dismiss, but many of those same things I cannot understand. So what I would do if I were you, and you can do it, or you are in a position to do it, is to go to those places yourself and see it for yourself. And specifically, I'm talking about Benin and Togo.
Mm-hmm.
Baba Oshi is going to Ghana
right next
in
to
a
Togo.
Few days.
Yeah.
And right next to Ghana is a small little country called Togo. Mm-hmm. And right next to Togo, before you get to Nigeria, if you know your geography, you go to Benin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the home of Vodun.
Yes,
and
sir.
So what I would encourage you to do, if you can, is to go and see it and experience it directly. In fact, this is something that they're going to begin that the people in these countries are going to begin to push much harder, because they're trying to build tourism up. These are poor African countries, and they're trying to poor in terms of infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
And the poverty of the people. The natural resources are there, but
yes,
they're talking about the development of the tourist industry. And so what they're going to be doing is promoting Vodun and telling people that you need to come and explore it and find out what it's about and see it for yourself. So if you can go there and see it, there's nothing like it. Huh?
Once we get back to how we can increase one with the universe, we can repel any darn evil that comes at us, man. Okay?
Listen to this. Now, early on, I made the point that whether we like it or not, we are the elders now. I'm 64. I think Oshi may be a year or two older than me. We
yes,
were talking
sir.
About Tony Browder. We're all in our mid-60s now. Okay?
Right.
We've lived a long time, relatively speaking, and we've had a very, very rich life.
Yes,
but
sir.
I still miss those elders
yes.
that I learned from. And one of the questions I would like to ask John Henry Clark, and it kind of relates to what you're talking about, it, although it goes a little different than that,
mm-hmm.
is how do we destroy the oppression that we confront without taking on the attributes of the oppressor.
That's deep.
Right.
In other
yeah.
words,
yeah.
I don't want this person's foot on my neck, but I don't want to take on the same personality as the person that has their foot on my neck.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you remove oppression without taking on the attributes of the oppressor?
Yes, sir. And
those are some of the thoughts that I would have, man.
See, whatever the white man say is good, I go the opposite. If they say it's good, then, hey, I know it's good for them. When they say something bad or evil, I know it's good for us. And so with them lying, talking about some Bodoon, see, I use our logic and thinking, man, what these devils say. That's why I'm concentrating on us getting our energy back, man. Okay? Peace and blessing. I don't want to take up too much time. I could talk to you, man, but at least you was honest, man, by saying something you weren't familiar with. You're a real brother, man. It take a real realize to say that, hey, I got to do some investigation. But peace and blessing, OG.
All right.
I love you, man.
You too. You too, Wes. Peace to you, man. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I agree with the brother that you are a brother that you just don't throw nothing out there, you know. Well, number one, you're a primary researcher. That's what you do.
I guess that has a lot to do. You know, that really, not only when you're able to see something for yourself and examine it yourself, one of the things that does is it really boosts your confidence. You can say that I saw this, I experienced this.
Right.
I didn't just look it up on Wikipedia, and I didn't just hear it from a YouTube scholar, or put it better yet, this is what I'm calling him now, a YouTube entertainer. Because we have people out there that are masquerading as scholars, but who are really entertaining us.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, hey, brother, I hear people, for example, we had this discussion earlier about this whole issue of Aboriginal identity and
right.
They came from Columbus. Yes, there was an African presence in America before Columbus, but that's very, very different from saying that we are the direct descendants of the first people to set foot in the Western Hemisphere. But when I see those Olmec heads, and I'm the only person that I know personally that's seen 20 of the Olmec heads. When Dr. Van Sertima wrote his book, They Came Before Columbus, there were only 12 or 14 that have been identified. And I've seen all of them now that I know of in existence. It gives me a tremendous amount of confidence to know that I've seen them, touched them, photographed them from all the sides of them, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, when you are able to do primary research, it's a wonderful thing. And for what I say is, if you can't do the primary research yourself, try to support those who are trying to do it.
That's what I do. That's what I do. That's why I support you.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah. Because I seen something where it talked about the Olmecs. And what I read, it said that, now, my understanding prior to reading this was that we sailed to this part of the world in ancient times. Thor Heyerdahl proved that it could be done. In fact, the messed up voyage of Columbus proved that it could be done, because he wasn't trying to sail to this hemisphere. He was trying to find a route to India around the Cape of Good Hope, you see. So he wasn't trying to find a route to here, but because the currents push you here. They'll make you come here. And so Thor Heyerdahl proved that it could be done. So then the thinking was that we sailed here to this part of the world, to the Western Hemisphere, into the Atlantic, through what is now called the Caribbean, in the Gulf of Mexico, to Cancun, Mexico. And the men and women who were here, who were there, once we sailed there, admired and respect the people that came. And built those statues, built those Olmec heads in honor of the men who brought civilization. Because it was the first known civilization in this hemisphere. Is that correct?
It's the parent civilization of the Americas.
And so they're saying, so from what I've read, they said to honor them who brought it here, you know, because, I mean, when you look at them, they're undeniably African, you know.
Well, the heads are.
Right.
But Ivan Van Sertima never argued that Olmec civilization was an African civilization.
Right.
He argued that there was an African hierarchy.
Right, or influence.
Among them, which in some ways is even more impressive, because that means if you only have a relatively small number of people, a handful of people who come and turn that civilization out, mm-hmm. who push that civilization in a positive, pivotal direction, then that says a great deal about the power and influence and importance of those people. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the folk who push the Aboriginal perspective tend to lump everything that happened before enslavement together. And there's a whole series of migrations. And it's like that with African people all over the world. Remember, Africa is the mother continent.
Right.
We are the parent people of humanity.
Right.
And so there are many, right. many migrations out of Africa to other parts of the world before, during, and after slavery days. And we have to be able to make distinctions between them. If we are, for example, to talk, I mentioned the Moors, but the Moors are not the first group of African people to go into Spain. We have evidence of African people in Spain 700 years before the Moors.
The Grimaldi.
And then you have the evidence of African people, Hannibal himself, who we assume was an African, although there's never been a physical description of Hannibal. But certainly there were Africans who fought in the army of Hannibal with the Carthaginians, and these are called Moors also. And then you would find other early examples of Africans there. They're all African people.
Right.
But I'm saying that the tendency when we talk about Aboriginal folk in America is just to lump all those migrations together. The Olmec civilization is not directly connected with the first group of people of African heritage settled in the Americas. And the Olmec, the Africans among the Olmec are not directly related to the groups of Africans who came as a result of enslavement. But we are all African people who arrived in the Americas at different times mm-hmm. and made different contributions. So what we're trying to do is round all those Africans up and say it doesn't matter what tribe you belong
right.
to or what part of the motherland you're from. We are all
That's
Africans,
right.
and we must act as such.
Exactly.
And that is the essence of Pan-Africanism
exactly.
and Garveyism.
Exactly, and that's where I am. We have another caller. 267, caller 267, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshi. Can you hear me?
Sister Susumi, she's calling from Botswana, Baba.
That's a beautiful country. Yeah.
Yes, good afternoon or good morning in the U.S.
Good morning.
Greetings, and it's such a great pleasure to hear you in person.
Are you in Haparone?
I'm about 15, 20 minutes. I'm a 20 minutes drive from Haparone. I'm in a village called Muchudi. Have you been to Botswana before? I was wondering, or Southern Africa?
I have, but I didn't really get very far out of the capital. I was there for about 3 days, and I was just an introduction to the country. Botswana is a huge country, sisters and brothers, and it's a beautiful country. There's a high level of literacy there. There's a lot of wealth there. Sister, if I'm not mistaken, Botswana is a very, very stable country, and it has a
yes,
rich history. And it played a very active role in the liberation of South Africa during apartheid days. Is that correct?
Correct, Dr. Rashidi. I was in high school back then, and I still remember having a lot of refugees and people who were running away from that apartheid system and the support that they got from Botswana. Yes.
So what are you going to share with us, my sister?
You know, Dr. Rashidi, I lived in the U.S. for over 30 years. I just repatriated back home last August. So it's been 6 months since I've been back in Botswana. I had always wanted to return. I'm a medical doctor by profession. So I went to the U.S. straight out of high school and did my training, all of my training in the U.S. But I always knew that that was not a country for our people. Thanks to the education of Dr. Khalid Mohammed. I had heard him while I was in high school here in Botswana. He came and toured South Africa. So when I got there, I knew that that wasn't really a place where our people were being treated well. And so a little bit of background information. But I had two questions for you.
Okay.
You mentioned the developments in Ghana. Before I returned to Botswana last year, August, I decided to travel to another part of West Africa because I'd never been anywhere other than West Africa, as far as the continent. So I went to Ghana in June as part of a tour group, the Sankofa journey. And then I also went in December, really running away from all the Christmas celebrations. I went back in December and came back in January. And between my trip in June and January, there was a huge difference as far as development. The airport, for example, had changed. You know, it was now, it had moved to a much bigger airport. The old one was being used for local flights. So my question regarding that is, with those developments, my concern is, you know, anytime there's a huge U.S. presence, especially as we know there is, and given the history, you know, that we are aware of as far as how Europe, some of the things that are stated in how Europe underdeveloped Africa, are these developments, if they're being done because there are other people there, do we risk losing those developments as soon as they finish their mission? That was one question, because I guess I'm trying to say, how should we prepare ourselves when developments come so that we do benefit, but then when those people leave because they've finished their mission or agenda, we don't risk being in poverty again. So that's one. Oh, and then
it's an excellent question. Excellent question. Let's go to the second one, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, the second one is, you mentioned Benin and Togo. Now, I grew up where nobody talks about the spirituality in Botswana, and I'm sure, you know, given quite a bit of Europeanization in Botswana, it's not as bad as in South Africa, but it's there. So nobody would talk about African spirituality when we're growing up. Since I've been back, people are openly talking about Sangomas or mentioning nothing in detail, but just mentioning it. Before, when I was growing up, nobody would say that was a taboo subject. That was a taboo. But my question is, if they're going to turn it into a tourism, or, you know, so that it's part of tourism in order to bring income, again, are we risking the Europeans defining what our voodoo, whatever we did? You know, my thoughts are, let me state it this way. Are they the ones in charge of the tourism? Because if they are, are we risking losing that to the Europeans? And the third question you've answered, I wanted to know if you had been to Botswana or Southern Africa. So that's all. Thank you very much, Dr. Rashidi. And I'll listen.
Excellent, excellent. And the reception is very, very good. It's as though she's right there in Atlanta, man. Hanging out with me in Los Angeles.
I'm here.
I love Botswana. I think during the colonial days, it used to be called Bakwana Land. I know I'm not pronouncing it correctly. And they had a head of state who was very, very stable for a long time. So, yeah, I did visit, but only for a few days. And I didn't get too far out of the capital, which is Habarone. And I don't think you can really get to know a country by just visiting the capital alone. I've been, for example, to Bamako, Mali. And I've been to Niamey, Niger. But I really didn't get far beyond there. And so I don't know if I can really honestly say that I got a feel for the country itself. But I would love to go back. Over the last year, I took a group to Kenya. And I remember the first day we were there, we spent a lot of obviously, we were based in Nairobi the first day. And my brother, we went to a shopping mall. And you would have thought you were anywhere in the United States or Europe. Ultra modern shopping mall. You would never think you were in Africa. In fact, I took a lot of photographs because a lot of African Americans or Africans in America,
right,
who haven't been to the motherland, have a very, what I call, limited or even distorted view of Africa.
That's true.
And you know, some of the worst traffic jams in the world are in the cities of Africa, the capitals of Africa. You're going to see that in Accra.
Because I know.
But not designed for the a volume of cars that we see today. So I don't know if these changes are positive or not. And the sister raised the important point of, would these changes be coming about in the first place if not for the involvement of non-Africans being there? Ghana, for example, there's talk about developing or expanding her relationships with the U.S. military.
Right.
Putting more bases there.
Yeah.
This is something that we really have to be concerned about. And then the last question is defining things from our own perspective. Now, I had a sister, and I haven't talked to her since, but she came and met me in my hotel, and she'd been given a government mandate. This is in Cotonou, Benin. And she was the one really talking about their desire to expand tourism there and push Vodun and go to so many Vodun temples there. It never occurred to me to ask her if the intended tourists were African-American or European.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I never thought about that. The thing that I think I'll say this and I'm done. The thing that I had the issue with in terms of the sister is that she also, the sister in Benin, is that she was also pushing very aggressively that we must address and put forth that Africans were actively involved in the slave trade. Okay, and that's a very sensitive and delicate issue for me. But for her, she was adamant about it. Yeah. And this is a sister who was actually from Haiti, who I believe had married a brother from Cameroon and had been living in Benin for several years. Okay. So the sister from Botswana raised some very, very, very interesting perspectives. And I would hope to be able to talk to her some more.
Oh, most definitely. I would try to make that connection with her. Sister Susumi is an outstanding sister. She's been listening to my program even when I was on Blog Talk Radio. So she's been a constant listener. And then when she called from Botswana, I was like really, really thrilled and happy to hear her voice because I mean her being here. I'm going to take another call. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hold up, Brother Ocean, Brother Rashidi. Just a quick question. First of all, Oshi, have a beautiful and a safe trip.
Thank you, Jay.
Let me ask you this. What direction should African people be going in this country and back home?
Brother, that's much too broad a question.
Well, in the broadness of it, I'll try to make it more palatable to what should we be doing in this country to improve our condition, and what should we be doing in Africa to improve our condition? Is that better?
Well, it's the same thing we've been talking about all along. Black men should always marry a black woman. You start there. I mean, that ain't rocket science. Do that. Build on that. Spend more of our money with other black folk, those at home and those abroad. Join an organization of like-minded people, because you can't destroy the institutions of white supremacy by yourself. It's much more powerful than we are. Be more actively involved in the monitoring of the education of our youth. These are real basic things. You don't have to wait for somebody to give you guidance and direction. You don't have to wait for black people to unite. These are things that we can do in our day-to-day actions. And Africans in America have more wealth than just about any other group of Africans. We have more freedom of expression, as racist as Babylon is, than any other group of Africans in the world. What we lack for the most part is consciousness and cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we can be doing all the time, every day, much more effectively than we're doing. And the fact that for the most part we're not doing those things in the manner that I would like to see tells us that for the most part we're really not serious about African empowerment. We're just talking about it. A lot of us, I think, believe that black power, African power, is a good thing if you don't have to stay up too late and you don't have to spend any money and you don't have to go too far and it's not too late and it's not too early and it's not too hot and it's not too cold and I'm not too tired and I like the people that's involved, you see? And then when we begin to cut those layers apart, that tells us how serious we are or how serious we're not. And a lot of us just aren't really where we need to be right now. So we need to look, to me, at the most basic fundamental aspects of African liberation and how we advance our community. That's what I think.
Ashe. Brother Jay?
In regards to the continent, the same thing, you would say?
Same thing, of course.
Yeah.
I pointed out African Americans because most of the listeners, I think, of the show are Africans in America, and this is the 400th anniversary from Jamestown. We were landed there, taken there, so that brings Africa into wider focus. This is the reason a lot of us are going to Ghana this year, mm-hmm. of all years, because the government of Ghana strategically has made that a point. It's good for them and it's good for us. It raises the level of consciousness. It's a propaganda vehicle, and it will generate much more income in the motherland and give us direct exposure to Africa itself. Now, what I would say, and I know we're running out of time, is that it's ironic to me that the descendants of the people who were taken out of the door of no return are now in such a pivotal position to shape the future of Africa and Africans around the world. If we would just rise up, we could turn this bad boy out. We have the power, we have the potential to change the African world fundamentally.
But do we have the mind?
Don't have the consciousness, don't have the cohesion.
That's right.
And that's what we have to work on.
We don't have the mind. Exactly. It is about the mind.
In regards to education, should we take our children out of these Eurocentric schools and homeschool them or place them in African-centered schools?
I think if you're in a position to do that, you can. I believe that we can work in the system and outside the system, that we need to take all the resources we have, and in the words of Malcolm X, by any means necessary. Now, it may not be practical at this point for all of us to homeschool our children or take them out of the public schools. But we can, I believe, put pressure on the public schools. And we can educate the teachers in that school. We can make decisions to bring the scholars into the school. We can stock the libraries of those schools with relative books. But all of us need to get active and all of us need to get involved. Don't put the responsibility on other people. Now, this is one thing that annoys me some. When I hear people say, the leaders need to do this and the leaders need to do that, what are you doing? If you don't like the leadership, if you don't think the leadership is doing what it should be, you step up to the plate. Don't wait for somebody else and don't put the burden or the onus of African liberation on other people's shoulders. That's your job. Look in the mirror and ask yourself, what can I do right now at this moment? I don't have to wait for other people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because we ain't going to never get liberated that way.
I say. All right.
Okay, Brother Ochi, and have a good trip, man.
Thank you, Jay. Peace to you, my brother. Peace. Brother Renoko, yes, we're at that hour, man, at that time. Oh, I just want to ask you, have you been to the museum in Senegal, the new museum in Senegal?
No, I haven't been to it, but I've heard about it. And what people are telling me is that it's just a big, empty building.
Oh, because I read a little bit about
it. Here's the biggest museum in Africa.
Right.
And it may be big, but I'm told by folk who have been there that it's not much in there. And you notice that what you're hearing is not coming from Senegalese for the most part.
Yeah.
It's coming from other sources.
Other sources. Yeah.
But people, I know we got to go. Let me just give my contact information. Anybody can always reach me at renoko@hotmail.com. My name is spelled RUNOKO, renoko@hotmail.com. You can call me after the show at area code 323-803-8663. And you can always go to my website, which is drrenoko.com. My beautiful brother.
Man.
Stay strong.
Always.
Have a wonderful trip.
I sure will.
Have a great experience, and I look forward to the next time. You
always.
Stay strong, and thank you for having me.
Hey, listen, what time are you on Carl Nelson's show today?
I believe I'm on there at 5 o'clock.
Your time?
Eastern time.
5 o'clock Eastern time. Okay. That's 2 o'clock your time. All right. Brother Renoco, God bless you. I appreciate you. Love you. Respect you. We'll always support you until the next time. Okay?
Until the next time.
All right. Hotep. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, we've had a great time. I'm very thankful, for my guest, Dr. Renoco Rashidi, and wish him well in his travels and what he has done for our people and what all our listeners and callers have done and continue to do. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodia. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia family, peace. I'll see you soon.